At last we will reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last we will have revenge.
Accelerate to attack speed!
You're all clear, kid! Now let's blow this thing and go home!
The Force is strong in this one.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to a new episode of Remnants of the Rebellion. What's going on, Matt?
Nothing much, Mark. Just trying to calm it down after this awesome movie came out, obviously.
Well, I'm a little sick, but I'm going to fight it through this because I'm dedicated to doing the podcast.
It's what we do.
This is Remnants of the Rebellion, our new Star Wars podcast, part of the TrustMeOnJedi.com network. And for those of us, you that are just finding us on your RSS feed that listen to our other show, Rebel Radio, we decided to start a Star Wars podcast just because, why not? It's Star Wars.
It's Star Wars. It's and the best movie
it's
ever.
It's awesome.
And yeah.
And we're kind of crossing over today a little bit. We have brought in Frank from Rebel Radio, who's our other host on that show, to be a part of Remnants of Rebellion today.
Hello, everybody.
And he's just over there like, oh, I'm so excited. I get to be a special guest. I've never been a special guest before.
Yep. He's over there rubbing his own leg.
Yeah. Think,
well, that's my leg. Hold on.
That's you rubbing your own leg.
Oh, and, yeah. That is.
So we were going to have actually four people. The evil Dr. Tran, who the artist formerly known as the Warp Cave Podcast.
Yes.
And a friend of the show, Rebel Radio, has been on that a few times, was going to be here, but he couldn't make it. But Long sent me some notes about his thoughts on Rogue One. And, of course, we're recording this a few days after Rogue One has been in theaters, so this episode is going to be highly focused on Rogue One. We're going to talk about the movie, the kind of review it, and then some. And it will be full of spoilers. I'm going to go ahead and tell you that now. It's been out a few days. Most diehard Star Wars fans who listen to Star Wars podcasts have already seen it.
Exactly.
And if you are waiting to Christmas, stop right now, pause the podcast, because if you're listening on your iTunes or your Stitcher or whatever, you can pause and leave right where you left off. Come back next week after Christmas. Listen to the show, please. You know, so because I think it's fair that it's been out a few days. And we always do something on this show, Frank, a little bit different than Rebel Radio. People get to know us and what our favorite things are in the Star Wars universe. We've asked various questions of each other, like our favorite Sith Lord, our favorite, what else have we asked? You know, just various questions.
Lightsaber,
yeah.
Non-canon character, or bring back into canon.
So, we're going to do a question today, and we'll let you answer it first, since you're the guest host on this show today. And do you have a favorite non-Force user character in the Star Wars universe?
Well, I have actually quite a few, but I'm going to go with, like, probably the one that's not commonly probably be mentioned in this sense, but Padme.
Oh, yeah.
She was a really strong
Padme.
Yeah.
Padme.
Yeah.
How it's Padme.
Padme. Whatever.
She's not a panda.
She did eat the forbidden fruit.
But my point, though, is she was actually a very strong character.
Really?
Led her people.
She was the first cougar, dude. Think about it.
Well, she led her people.
She wasn't afraid. Let's not even get into that.
She led her people. She wasn't afraid to fight.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of saw where Leia's bloodline came from.
Yeah.
You know, in that sense.
And she did have a cool little pistol.
And she was hot.
Yeah, she was.
So
I don't know. We have to make fun of Frank since he's guesting on the show, but I can think of about 50 other characters that are cooler than her.
There's a lot of them
that are cooler than her.
You know? There's a lot of them, but she was cool, and I just don't feel like she would be mentioned in a normal sense.
You know, because
everybody would throw out, like, Boba Fett and this character and that character and, you know, the common, you know, just the easy ones that everybody,
the
you
toss-ups.
Know, yeah, the, yeah. You know, the ones that are so easy for everybody just to pick, you know. I was going with one that is a good character, a strong character that normally might not have gotten thrown out there.
He refuses to be mainstream. I like it.
All right, I got Matt's thumbs up.
What is your favorite non?
It's a little bit more in mainstream, but he's a newer character. I'm going to have to go with Poe Dameron. I think he's an awesome fighter pilot. And he's basically what Luke is without the Force. I think he can just light it up.
Wouldn't that be Han?
Yeah.
Whoa.
In some ways. I think Poe's a mix of
He had to be smuggled out. I mean,
isn't he
smugglers,
like
you know.
The replacement for Han?
No, no, don't say that. I think if anybody is, I'd say Finn is, but
I think it's a mix of Finn and Poe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Force Awakens.
The new bro.
Finn Poe. Poe Finn.
The bros from a galaxy far, far away.
And he gave mutants their power in another series. That was pretty cool. So Poe Dameron, everybody.
Poe Dameron. Oh, if I had a favorite non-Force using character. I like Lando. I've always been a Lando guy. Yeah. I
smooth talker.
You know, I mean, what have we here? Yeah. I mean, you know. Dude.
Ladies man.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to be a ladies man in the Star Wars universe, you'd be Lando.
Yeah, you would.
You know? You'd be like, he kisses the princess's hand, and he's a smooth talker. Oh, yeah. And
you truly belong among with us.
Pulled on the cape other than Vader. Yeah.
That might be my most favorite. We're going to talk a little bit later after our Rogue One review about future Star Wars spinoff films, but I almost burped in the mic.
I think you did.
That might be one of my favorite things I'm looking forward to in the Han Solo film, is we're going to get more Lando, played by young Donald Glover, who, if people aren't familiar with him, this guy is a good young actor. He's not even that young anymore. He's in his late 20s, early 30s, I believe now. But if you're not familiar with Donald Glover, the kid is good, and he's going to be an awesome Lando. And I think that's why I'm looking forward to the Han Solo movie, to see... Because obviously we know Han and Lando had a history together.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. To get to see more of that. I love it when I watch the Star Wars Rebels and the few episodes where Lando's popped up. It's like, oh, it's cool. It's Lando.
Yeah.
I really like Lando, you know. And so that was our little get to know you, our Star Wars history podcast. Because that's what Remnants of Rebellion is. It's kind of Star Wars history. Remnants and history in a way. But we branch off into different things.
All the time.
So, right, we have a special question for you since you're guesting on the show. Where does Star Wars sit for you and in influencing you and the things you're into at our age or our life? I know, obviously, people listen to Rebel Radio know that Star Wars is a big part of our show, and trust me, Jedi.com is the name of the website, but how important has Star Wars been to you and influenced you and the things you're into today?
You know, it's really hard to say that I can think of anything else that got me into the whole sci-fi action thing. I mean, it was like...
It's a good way to put it.
I keep coming back to Star Wars. I mean, yeah, there's so many cool sci-fi action movies, but it's still Star Wars.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I think that people that are a little bit older than you and I, in their late 40s, 50s, they always want to talk about Lost in Space and shows like that, Star Trek. Lost in Space. Because they're a few years older, but our generation, because you're 42 and I'm 40, we're right there smack in the middle of the Star Wars generation. We are the Star Wars generation.
We are the Star Wars generation.
And I think that's a good way to put it. You always come back to it. That's well spoken. And did you have a special question for our guest, Frank T. Biscuit?
Yeah, I mean, you asked me a cool question. You know, we asked each other a cool question like a few episodes ago, and that's... You know, if you could bring a non-canon character back into you know, currency, you know, who would it be?
Oh, thanks. Brain fart, but the main character from Shadows.
Oh.
Dash Rendar?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would have loved to. Like, just a cameo in one of the movies would have been cool. Like, just a ship. Would have been cool.
First episode was all Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah.
20th anniversary.
It's funny. I think Mark gave that same answer. I think Mark said that.
Mitchie might be one that I would like. Yeah, I can remember.
Or maybe
he
was an honorable mention.
It was an honorable mention. Okay. So there's our get to know you Star Wars moments there. Little moments. Yeah. So Rogue One was in theaters, and it's the first Star Wars movie to not take place in the saga of films. But yet, it's still part of the Star Wars saga. Just a spinoff. I don't know if spinoff's the right word. It's just another story in the universe.
It's
a non-Skywalker film. That's a good way to put it. And it was interesting to watch it. From the very beginning, with no crawl, was interesting. It was a different way to start a Star Wars movie. It was a different way to see the Star Wars universe instead of having a somewhat linear story that we know is being told over three or four films or whatever it may be, the trilogies we've had so far, to get a standalone film that takes place all in a few hours or takes place in a 2-hour movie and to have it a beginning and a middle and an end. And I walked out of it kind of exhilarated. I wasn't quite as high on it as everyone else was. I know you guys texted, and Frank said you had texted saying, hey, man, this might be my second favorite. I walked out of it really liking it, but the more I thought about it, I backed off on it a little bit. And not in the same way that people backed off on Force Awakens. People backed off on Force Awakens and really wanted to hate it.
Yeah.
And I think it became a mainstream thing to do. Oh, it's not cool to like it, so I'm not going to like it.
I met one of those guys,
I too. Backed off on this more because I really started thinking about it, that it was. I really enjoyed Rogue One, but it really wasn't as good as people made it out to be,
I think. Why did you try to overanalyze it?
It's not really overanalyzing. It's more just really thinking about things.
No, it was really good.
The character development was lacking in this. Here's a good question, and we're going to get into our first spoiler. When Jen and the captain are on the beach at the end, did you really feel anything? If you really think about it, no, you didn't. Because we didn't have time to get to know these people. We're so caught up in the action of the Death Star plans being stolen that they didn't take the time to develop these characters enough, I felt. The Imperial soldier that, what's the word for it?
Rogue soldier.
Like, what was the point of him? You know, when you really think about it, I started really thinking about it. Like, Bodhi was his name. Other than at the end where he helps get the signal across, it's like they never really gave a reason as to why he left them, you know, and they never really used him to a point.
Yeah, the point was is that her father gave him the original
The plans.
Plans.
Well, right. He had the message for
her. The message. Right. And so he probably, like a lot of people probably at the time, some people, like if you go back to characters even in the canon of Han Solo, you wanted to join the Empire because you wanted to be a pilot and all this. And really, that was the only way you could become a pilot if you didn't have your own ship. Once you become there, you realize that they're not great people.
I think what I'm getting at is I felt that the movie was very all over the place at times.
You got 2 hours.
Fan service movie.
And, I didn't have a problem with the fan service stuff in it. You know, that.
But the whole movie was fan service.
I don't know if the whole movie was.
So you think it should have been two or three movies?
We already knew what happened.
There was somebody actually suggested that maybe this should have been told over like two films, at least.
I could have been it's like
that
two films.
Why not take the you, if you could take the Hobbit that's 200 pages and make three movies out of it? You know,
yeah.
Why and don't mistake this for me not liking it. I still put it right. I think it's like my fourth favorite. I still think Empire is better. Empire, A New Hope, and Force Awakens are better. So I still like the movie a lot. Don't take this for not liking it. But the more I think about it, I just felt like these rebel spies could have been developed better. That was my biggest problem with the film, was like we had this crew of soldiers we're supposed to root for, but I like didn't really feel sad either.
I mean, they gave us quick snippets. You had the
most interesting characters were Chirrut and Baz.
Well, those are the two characters that didn't get hammered out in
the
whole thing.
But they end up being the most interesting even though they get hammered out.
Because you figure her character real quick, they take her father. She gets picked up by, what's his name?
Shaw.
Gets abandoned by him because she...
Saw.
Sorry.
She gets abandoned by him when she's 16 because he's afraid that people were catching on to who she was.
Yeah.
She winds up in a prison. They get her out of prison and then explain to her what her father's done. And then she's like, she wants to save her father, but also stop... what's happening.
Right, and that was probably...
The main character that helps her out, his was that he joined the Rebellion, been fighting for as long as she has, done despicable things to see this thing through, and then wants to keep fighting instead of giving up because of all the stuff that he's done.
Well, yeah, no, I get all that. Like, I thought the captain was pretty decent for his role. But, like, Jen, that was probably the emotional part of the movie was Jen and her father and their relationship. But other than that...
But there wasn't really a lot of relationships. She was like 6 years old.
But other than that, you didn't really get to know Jen. I think that's part of the problem with it. She wasn't as likable as Rey is.
No, you know, definitely not.
And Force Awakens.
Well, but the movie followed her closer, I think, in Force Awakens.
To an extent. You know, and but other than that, I felt that the... the focus of the movie could have been a little bit tighter. But I still like it had some incredible action sequences in it. Some of the most action we've had in a Star Wars movie ever.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, I just felt that the team could have been developed a little bit more. That was probably my biggest quip with the movie. It was just like, we're introduced to all these characters very quickly, and then bam, all of a sudden, like, they're gone before we know it.
But I also think the deal is that right now Disney's kicking themselves in the butt thinking, dang, we could have made, like, more money if we would have dragged this out to two films.
And then what about all the, well, we'll get to that later, all the scenes that aren't in the movie. But then, but also there's a lot of stuff to really like about the movie. And then someone made a good point about, like, Saul Guerrero. Someone said, well, how come he didn't hand over the captain within right away to the rebellion? And I think, why was he testing to make sure? I think the idea was it all took place over a few hours. I don't think Saul had, I think Jen and the captain were arriving about the same time that Saul had got this guy. And they just didn't have, it just didn't have time to, you know, for him to hand him over to the rebellion right away. Or maybe Saul doesn't have the means to hand over him to the rebellion. Because I remind someone, Jedha was under Imperial control at that moment. He couldn't get him off the planet. That's why they sent Jen and what's the captain's name? I can't remember.
Caspian?
No, it's like something like that. But he sent them in there to get the Imperial pilot off the planet with the message. You know, that was the whole idea. And Saul Guerrero is an interesting character. It's like Forrest Whitaker kind of talking with like this whole can barely talk kind of thing. It's kind of weird. Yeah,
that asthma attack.
He's sick like General Grievous was. You know?
Well, you look at it because he's like probably all human when he picks her up, and then by the time
I wanted to go back and watch his Clone Wars episodes. I didn't have time.
Yeah, me neither.
To watch the three-parter where he originally appears, and apparently he's going to be appearing on Rebels, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so. That's my thoughts on the film, Nish. I felt it was a little all over the place. And I have one more quip, but we're going to leave that in a minute when we talk about Darth Vader.
Okay.
But your initial thoughts on the film, you guys.
Overall, I liked it. Of course, the action sequences were well done. This was a movie that I don't think was planned out originally, and they did a really good job to piece it together, I believe, in my opinion. Because at first it was just, many Bothans died.
No, that's Return of the Jedi.
To get this information?
That's for Death Star 2. That's Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
Really? That's not A New Hope?
Nope.
Really?
That's Return of the Jedi.
I always thought that was... I thought it was A New Hope.
Everyone makes that mistake. That's the Return of the Jedi
plans. I'm one of those people that made a mistake. So I came in here, I'm like, these guys are going to die. I was like, I know this story. But but it's like, you know, I felt like it was made off of that sentence, pretty much, getting the Death Star plans. And... thinking about it that way, I think that they did a really good job, you know, getting it out of that and pacing together the story about Jen and her father. And Mikkelsen was, even though he didn't play as big of a part as I thought he would, I liked him in the movie as the father. The Death Troopers were pretty intimidating. I thought they were cool. They were speaking some weird language, right?
Okay, here's a theory I have on that, which I stole off the internet. I stole this theory, is that I think they talk weird like that. It's more like a military thing. It's sort of decoding.
Gotcha.
So you don't know what people are saying, you know?
Like they're like SEALs or something, elite.
Yeah, that's what I think that was.
Okay. They can actually
shoot stuff. So they're all made-up language?
Yeah, their own made-up language.
So they had like a couple more hours of target practice.
Yep, a few more hours. But overall, like you said, I think there could have been a little bit more emotional attachment. They did have to, I guess since they're just trying to make one movie, they were trying to fit a lot of stuff in there. I think they did fairly well with that. And the fan service was great.
We're going to talk about the fan service moment.
Yeah, I know. We'll talk about it more. Sure. I don't want to get too much into it. We'll save it. But I liked the droid. At first, I was a little iffy on him. He was a little bit more robotic.
I did enjoy the droid character at first.
Right amount of humor without cheese.
Yeah. It was a good... They've done a good job, even BB-8 in Force Awakens now this, of developing the droids with a little bit of personality.
Yeah.
And I think you can put it top 4 or 5. I don't think you can put it top 2 because, you're trying to... Well, I mean, you can put it at top 2, but for me, I can't put it top 2. The highest I can go is like 4 or 5.
I said tied with my top 2.
Tied with top 2? Okay, that's it. Okay, 3. Like going like a 2A, 2B kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
But my lineup is a little different than everybody else's lineup, so.
Oh, yeah. So. But what about you, Frank?
I'll put it like this. I remember if anybody listened to our other podcast, I was not that hyped on it. I really wasn't. I was kind of
you weren't.
I was like, the scenes look okay. When first trailer, I just absolutely hated on it because her character just looked like she had no personality whatsoever. Well, I was like, oh my gosh.
Funny is, nothing in that first trailer was even in the movie.
Yeah, we'll talk about that
in a minute.
Yeah. But I was just like, I wasn't impressed with it. I wasn't even hyped today. I mean, I got my tickets, but I wasn't still hyped. I left that movie going, holy crap. I went into a movie, it almost reminded me of Mad Max.
Okay.
I wasn't hyped to see Mad Max until the one trailer where they were swinging. And then I was a little bit more pumped than I was Star Wars. And I left Star Wars feeling the same way I did with Mad Max, going, holy crap, this is an awesome movie.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see it again. And I am this weekend with my family. But I like the characters. Even her character, you know, I know y'all were like, oh, they could have hashed it out. I think there was enough to get the background up to a degree. They kind of dropped. The only characters that you don't get enough hammering out is, like Mark said, the pilot. And the two most likable characters is Ninja Dude.
Chirrut and Baz.
Yeah, Baz. Which are two characters I wind up loving. I mean, they were like the two baddest ass characters.
Well, Donnie Yen's badass.
No matter he's badass. Yeah. But I like his character because, well, they do kind of hash his character out. He's a character that wants to be a Jedi, respects the Force, is aware of the Force, but is not
a Jedi. Well, I think he wants to be a Jedi. I think
he's Force sensitive in a sense.
Well, no, you listen to the dialogue in the film. They mentioned they used to be the Guardians of the Wills. Right. See, that's part of the problem. They didn't develop that, okay? The whole idea that Jedha, and apparently some of this might have been one of the original scripts, the Jedha is where some of the Jedi temples were.
Right.
Okay?
Well, that was one of the Jedi temples that they blew up.
They alluded to it. And the Guardians of the Wills guarded the secrets of the Jedi, and he might have been, and people believe that Chirrut must have been a former member of the Guardians of the Wills. And the Guardian Wills, according to Star Wars lore, they're not Force sensitive, but they believed in the Force and protected it.
But, you know, but isn't that that's the place, the first place they blow up with the Death Star is the Jedi, the last Jedi temple.
And that whenever he's walking towards all that gunfire, I got the feeling like I felt whenever Kanan was just going to pull out a lightsaber. And I was like, is he going to pull out a lightsaber? Is he going to pull out a lightsaber? And I'm like, God, please pull out a lightsaber. He didn't. It was still a cool scene. But, I was just like, that is so awesome. You know,
Donnie Yen was really cool to see in a Star Wars.
And I like, you had that sense of their friendship. There was enough there of their sense of their friendship about that they were a team, that they did this together.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And stuff. Yeah, that's one of the things I liked about it. Yeah, there's a lot of things that I liked about this movie. That's why I want to see it again, you know.
And it's one of those I think will take a second viewing to take it all in, because there's a lot going on in the movie. Like I said, it's several different planets during the film,
mm-hmm.
Several different locations, and it was really cool to see a war movie in the Star Wars universe, you know, how it played out. That was kind of different. I thought the Battle of Scarif at the end was very good. excuse me. I think I really liked how it came together to A New Hope, and it's funny, A New Hope was airing on TV a lot this weekend, and you look at things in A New Hope a little differently now, if you really pay attention, as this is how they got the plans. And it's kind of funny, though. Did anybody pick up on that they had to get the shield down to get the communication through? It's just like Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
They had to get the shield down so they could blow up the Death Star shield around the Death Star. If people complained that Force Awakens was like just like A New Hope, well, here we are with the shield again having to be taken down.
Another shield.
But they're showing the similarity of the technology that they were using throughout these movies.
But,
you know, except for this one was a shield projected from the space, projected around the planet, whereas the other one was from the planet projected too.
I really did like how the Mon Calamari general, Pre-Admiral Akbar guy used the ship to ram the Star Destroyer.
Hammerhead.
Yes. I thought that was cool.
That was cool.
It was like, you got to see the hammerhead.
Let's talk about a little bit some of the CGI in it. Okay.
Okay.
There's lots been made about them bringing Peter Cushing back to life.
That was cool. I thought it was cool.
I it's funny. People seem to be either liked it or they didn't like it. And people are seeing different things. Some people say it looked really good. I've talked to friends and people said it looked kind of cheesy and kind of bad. I wonder if maybe it depends on the projector you see it on at the theater.
Yeah.
It could
be. Well, I saw it on the XD big-ass screen, so it's like
but the face even right those there. Don't always mean it's the best projector. Because right. a lot of it has to do with the film quality, how good their digital projector is and the light bulb and all that. And I thought it looked really good.
Yeah, we went to the same place. Me and Mark went to the same place to view it, and I thought it was really good as well.
I liked it. I'll be honest with you. I only have one problem with the CGI faces, and this goes the same for if you're a Final Fantasy game player. That's the same kind of CGI quality you're going to get to a degree, is the over-animating in the face. Too many facial twitches.
I didn't really catch that on this. Like in the cheeks and the eyes.
There's a lot of movement in his cheeks.
It more, for me, kind of took me out of the movie a little bit, because I know Peter Cushing's dead, and it's like, I'm watching this, and it's almost creepy.
Yeah.
But
I thought I was like...
Yes, but his character is vital to
no, what I agree that on. He had to be in the movie, but it's, I guess it's the first time we've ever really seen this.
The CGI Leia.
See, the Leia happened so quickly that I didn't have time to catch, like, did it look that good or not? I've heard people say it actually looked better than the Peter Cushing, but
see, I'm the opposite on that.
But if you go back and look, though, Carrie Fisher had a very doll-looking face anyway in the original film. She
did. Yeah.
So I can see why hers looked a little more doll.
But I think that's why it's fair is that I know she's still alive. I
apologize for coffee on the podcast. I'm trying to make it through this sick.
That's the thing is, I know she's still alive, and I know what she looks like now. So to see a part that she didn't really play,
yeah,
being her, and she's not dead. If it was like if she was passed away, but you know, I'm not saying that Carrie is, but
it,
you know what I mean.
It makes for interesting. It's scary what they can do. You know, now in a future Star Wars movie, what if they bring back Alec Guinness as Obi-Wan? You know,
yeah, dude, right?
It's almost creepy. And it's funny they had to get permission from Peter Cushing's estate to do that.
Yeah,
apparently his former secretary runs his estate. I guess he had no kin to run it.
Yeah,
and she gave him permission, and they let her look at it before they even used it to make sure she was okay with it.
And that was funny because I was thinking about that this morning. Like, who did they contact to get? For his estate to get that permission.
Yeah.
And the fact that, what, now, like, Universal Studios, that did all the horror movies, they're going to recast him as a Dracula or something?
Well, that was Hammer Films that did a lot of those Peter Cushing movies.
Yeah. I was saying, were they going to, bring back and do some horror films with him CGI?
He was such a great actor.
He was.
You know.
And that's why he was so good in that role, like, just playing that evil... Because he, basically, wasn't he, like, the head of the Empire when it wasn't...
Basically.
That was non-Sith
and Vader
powered.
Listened to him.
And well, and here...
No, him and Vader kind of were right underneath it, so that's why he's like, I'm not afraid of Vader. He was the only one that would talk to Vader.
And that's the perfect segue into the next thing I want to talk about in Rogue One, is Darth Vader, okay? Now, I'm glad he's in the film, don't get me wrong, but out of all the characters...
Got to ask him over there?
Out of all the characters in the movie... I'm going to go out and say this. He's the most unnecessary.
Yes,
there's no reason for him to be in Rogue One. First off, Tarkin already put Krennic in his place. Told him, look, bitch, I'm in charge of the Death Star. You're not.
Right.
So he goes and whines to Vader. Vader tells him the same thing. He's in charge of the Death Star. You're not. There's no point for it at all. The joke Darth Vader makes is terrible. That should have been left out.
I didn't even catch it. So.
It's bad.
Don't hold your breath.
The
or...
coolest part of that scene was seeing him on his castle, Mustafar. It like added this whole new mythology of Darth Vader. You know, that he comes out of his suit and puts himself in the back of the tank and all that.
Yeah,
and
the fact the tank with him in the tank, that looked cool.
That was cool, but was it necessary? No. That whole scene with Krennic really was kind of pointless in the film.
Yes. But I'm not going to complain too much.
It's fan service. And then Darth Vader doesn't really appear again until the end of the film.
And that's where they could have just left it. Him appearing right at the end, and you would have been like, holy crap, it's Vader!
Right. You know? And I thought about that. And I don't have a problem with the scene at the end. I think the scene at the end is incredibly badass.
No, that's what they should have just left that at that.
My biggest problem with the scene at the end is, and this is where the character development comes in. Jen and Captain and everyone dies on Scarif, right? Then, before we even have a chance to mourn them or... celebrate them being heroes, we have this really violent scene with Darth Vader, and it almost seems like you and I can't even catch your breath.
Yeah,
and maybe they could have done something in the editing room or something to maybe have a scene with Mon Mothma and them acknowledge that, hey, we've got the plans, just to give it some room to breathe before Vader appears and unleashes Holy Force Hell.
Yes, that is exactly what he unleashed. I mean, he's like crushing guys, throwing guys up against walls, throwing them to the side of the wall. right. freezing lasers yeah, throwing back a, at him.
I think that's where the problem lies. They were trying to, like you said, it would have been nice to mourn them just a little bit, and then the scenes. But they were also trying to like push you right into a New Hope yep. with that final scene. They should have just edited and flip flopped those two scenes. They should have done that with the whole thing, where the ship takes off, and then you cut back to the tidal wave of the explosion coming at them.
Something could have maybe, but it still works. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Darth Vader scene's really cool.
At the end, you're still going to love the hell out of this movie.
It's kind of funny that the Darth Vader scene happens, because then we get three movies where he doesn't do anything remotely that badass. You yeah. know, like
I think that's why they did it, because
the lightsaber scenes with Luke and are great in Empire and Return of the Jedi, but they're not that scene.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny, and it's interesting how they kept all lightsabers out of the marquee of the film, and then we got this huge fan service scene at the end, and it was cool. What did y'all think about the suit? A lot of people say it looked a little different, like the guy.
It did look different.
Well, the guy. They use a stuntman, I guess, in the suit. Then Dave, obviously James Earl Jones' voice.
Yeah.
Did he seem smaller than David Prowse to y'all? Like, Darth Vader just didn't seem as big.
I couldn't tell.
No, but yeah. the helmet seemed bigger, like around the neck.
Yeah, they tried to give it like a look from 1977, but it didn't quite look exactly the same. I just
remember the around the neck seemed skinnier. This one seemed fat, like he had a fat throat right. going down or something, like, you know?
Hmm.
And the suit in the critic scene is different than the suit at the end if you look really closely. You know, and so they...
Because of the stunt?
Yeah, I guess the producers made a comment, well, maybe he has multiple suits.
He probably you know? Does. I mean, come on, it's fair. You think he's going to wear the same stanky suit all the time?
Yeah, it's true. Maybe.
Psh, get me out of my tank. Did anybody dry and clean my suit today?
So,
damn it.
Now that we're talking about fan service scenes, so we kind of all agree that maybe, you know, the film could have worked without Vader. But it's still cool to have.
I
love
the fan service scenes. I was like, oh, check that out. Check
I enjoyed the 3PR2 cameo. That was cool. The Doctor of Vazon and Ponda Baba one at the beginning.
Yes,
the
what I liked.
Was cool, but like, yes. How did they get off the planet that fast? 5 minutes later, the planet's getting blow up.
Maybe they're already on their way to getting the heck
Tasha
out of there.
Station,
yeah, to Mos Eisley.
Mos Eisley.
Maybe they were on their way to
that
the
was
thing.
Cool. I have to say that the pilots were a little distracting because you had this really clean, brand new, digitally presented film, and they were splicing in unused footage from A New Hope with these. With the original pilots, and you could see the grain.
Yeah, you could.
It's like, you know, and someone made a comment in an article I was reading, why didn't they just CGI the pilots like they did Cushing? It would have looked better, probably, in the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead they used this leftover archival footage, and it just was like...
Because it's fan picture. Service?
I don't even know if that was so much fan service or...
Because to take the footage from...
Or that was more of a continuity issue. They were trying to tie it in with
that,
A New Hope.
And just to use some scenes that weren't used before or stuff like that for the fans.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's cool. They brought some scenes from way back then.
It's one of those things I think on home viewing on Blu-ray, you probably won't notice as much. It's one of those things that sticks out more, I think, on a big screen.
Yeah, when you're blowing it up like...
The Rebels nods were cool. I missed Chopper the first time, but when I see it again, I'm going to look for him.
Yeah, me too.
I did hear the general say, paging General Syndulla, so we know that Hera must have survived. I'm pretty sure it's not her father at this point.
Ahsoka, the nod to Ahsoka.
Where was that? See, yeah, I didn't confirm that.
He said he's going to go to Alderaan and contact the Jedi
No, that was talking about Obi-Wan. No,
that was Obi-Wan.
He said, she served me well.
Oh, he did?
During the Clone
he
Wars.
He did. That's why I was wondering.
Going to Alderaan to talk to her. She served me well during the Clone Wars. So it implicates she was on Alderaan while it got blown up.
You're the first person I've heard to say she.
No, I'm going to see it this Saturday, so I'll
no, I'm pretty
I have
sure
it at
y'all.
Home. I'll
I'm pretty sure he's alluded to Obi-Wan there with that.
At first I was, but I think Matt's right. He did say she, threw me off.
I would have seen that by now in some article. Believe me, I've read a lot of stuff about this movie.
You're probably filling up, Mary, when you were watching the movie.
No. I've read a lot of stuff about this movie already. I'm pretty sure he was alluding to Obi-Wan.
Well, I'm seeing it again Saturday, so I'll let you know.
Yeah. But any other fan services we're forgetting about? That those seem to be the big ones. 3PO, Ponda Baba. The ATST, of course. Yeah, first time we see one since Jedi. That was cool.
Whenever he fires the missile at it, and it doesn't do anything.
Oh, at the AT-AT?
Yeah.
And he turned his head and looks back at him? That was cool. Okay, we talked about the first trailer earlier, had none of those scenes are in the movie. You know, we haven't had any confirmation from Gareth Edwards yet about what these scenes were. Is this because, there's no way all those, because there's a video out there, it's almost 3 minutes long, of footage that's not in the film. There's no way that's all from reshoots. Some of it could be, but I wonder what happened to that stuff. Yeah. Well, like Vader standing in front of the red screen that's not in the movie, a critic talking to Vader and saying the power is immeasurable. That's not in the movie.
Because a lot of time they'll film scenes and they just doesn't flow with right, the movie.
But a but few
scenes. They'll use them in trailers.
Yeah, but just a few. This is a lot. For
maybe it was running too long. You know how they are. Well, it's already 2 hours long. And they're like, oh, it's going to be 2.5, almost 3 hours. People don't want to sit in the theater that long. Or we want more screenshot showings, so we got to shorten the movie. And, well, and actually, right. I've heard that studios will shorten a movie so that they could get more screen showings in.
Well, no, that's true. But I'm just curious why Rogue One had so much that's not. Her walking the platform and the TIE fighter comes up in front of her. And then she walks the platform and no TIE fighter appears. You know, it's
probably like 3 seconds they could cut out. But
why did you spend that money on an expensive shot and then not use it? You know, because that was obviously a completed shot because it was in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's another scene with the Death Troopers on the planet that she lived on, and there's a huge fire behind them. So it makes you wonder, did they search more? Did they burn the house up? You know, things like that. There's a scene in the trailers where stormtroopers are walking through water. That's never in the movie. There's a scene where Jin and the captain are running through the base and then running on the beach. In the movie, Jin and the captain are never even on the beach until the end when they die. You know, so I wonder how all that stuff worked in the actual film itself. And
I think it was just shortening the film.
So it is kind of cool, though, to see that how we got the plans now. You know, and as a prequel, it worked well. And we... You know, I wonder, though, I hope the Han Solo movie doesn't end with him and Mos Eisley. We can't have every one of these simply tie with New Hope, right?
Maybe it is. But you know what? You know what I liked? And I thought was, to me, was cool? Was also towards the very end. Whenever they're like, the rebels are getting away, and he says, Lord Vader and his fleet will take care of them. And about then, you just see the Star Destroyer just like... Boom, and then like all the other ships just slam right into it right before they got a chance to go into hyper jumps, you know. So I thought that was cool, just like this, because every other ship was just like battle destroyers, whereas Vader pulls up in his Star Destroyer, you know, the next biggest thing next to the Death Star itself, and you see the magnitude of how big it is.
What did y'all think about the use of the Death Star in the film, as far as? The original film, we just got this space station that didn't move a lot. And but I think that's a lot of it was the times, the technology back then. They were able to film the space scene with a little Death Star model. Yeah. Now we see the Death Star turning sideways.
Underneath.
Tarkin ordering to shoot it at only one speed. What did he call it? I can't remember the term.
Basically, not at full blast. Yeah,
and it could just blast the city. So we got to see.
Yeah.
Which still looked like it was like 5 times the strength of a nuclear bomb. And it's
funny, when I was watching A New Hope the other day, it made me realize how... Yeah, he sneezed on the show. It's okay. And how violent this Death Star is. You know, it gave you a new look at the Death Star, so you go watch A New Hope now, you realize that's a bad... Like, when you watch original Star Wars, if you really think about it, the Death Star is huge, but it's not that intimidating. It's like, it's a big space station. Now it's like intimidating. When you watch A New Hope, you're like, man, this thing's a badass ship.
You feel they have more control over what they could do with it.
Yeah.
But I also like they explained why there was a weakness in it. You know, like the other one, like, why would you put a weakness in a ship that's 3x3?
Right. And that's one of the things I like the most about the movie, is how it did tie in with A New Hope. I thought the writers did a great job of tying it in and making it a seamless prequel. And you know, I've read some people say, oh, it's a prequel we always wanted. Forget the... I'm not going to knock the other prequels. They are what they are. You know?
Right.
You know, it's prequel bashing is just not cool anymore, people. They're not going anywhere. Just accept them for what they are.
Exactly.
But I simply felt this was another movie that tied in the Star Wars universe and gave us a new look at things. And it worked very well. It's not perfect. I think I need to view it a few more times to see where I fully stand with it.
But you know what I like? Sorry, Mark. Go ahead. I apologize.
You're already talking now.
As I think we're going to get a new thing, a sense of one-upmanship. Because I think Force Awakens brought it back up. And I think this one is like, kind of like, well, we're going to try to one-up Force Awakens by making a better film. And then, like, all the others are going to, like, well, now we got to make a better film.
See, I don't know if I feel that, because I think Force Awakens is better than this movie.
Yeah, me too.
I said an attempt to one up. So, I mean, it's not like it's going to drop. It's going to be up there with the trying to make a good Star Wars movie every time. You're not going to be that one to be that one, that one group of writers that once.
Well, I wasn't worried about that anyway.
Because I don't think group of actors that fail.
I don't think we'll ever get another Bad Star Wars movie because George Lucas isn't directing them.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And doing the casting.
You know, I think Disney, it's hard to argue what they do. I think they do a pretty good job. So before we talk about our last little topic here, any final thoughts on Rogue One other than that we haven't covered? Anything I miss? I mean, we talked about the CGI, Peter Cushing, the use of Darth Vader, the characters.
The new ships. I like the new, was it the Interceptor or whatever looking one it is?
Oh, yeah.
No, I would say Interceptor, but I think it has another name. And then it's a slightly smaller, bigger, but the U-Wing
is what it's
called. The U-Wing.
I did think the space battle was great.
Yes.
Yeah.
We did get a good space battle.
I like the run of the X-Wings on the planet when she was trying to get her dad.
Oh, yeah. And they just come on, dive in.
Like, you know, yeah. So I thought that was a cool scene.
Yeah.
But the space battle was pretty awesome. Like you said, this was a war movie.
Right.
You know, you don't have a lot of time. I mean, you think about it. Pearl Harbor, all of these movies, they didn't have a whole lot of time to hammer out characters, but you still really like the movie, you know, because it's a war movie. It's not a, oh, we get time to know these people and blah, blah, blah. It's like, this is what happened, you know?
I don't know. I've seen movies. You can develop characters and still have a good, solid 2-hour movie.
But look how long something like Pearl Harbor is and Saving Private Ryan. You know, even those, they're war movies, but they're really long. They're like 3 hours long. There's a lot of quick, intense battles that run about 5 or 10 minutes. And then it's a lot of story development in between 3 or 4 scenes of battles in each one of these movies. I mean, you figured Private Ryan, 10 minutes of a horrific, gory battle scene, and then a lot of character development, a couple of small battles, some more character development, and then the ending.
There's a long...
So they wanted to drag that out to 3 hours for Star Wars, and that's fine. Disney just didn't want to do that.
The evil Dr. Tran Long, who couldn't make it to be with us today, he sent me his thoughts. And, excuse me, Long gave it a B+. He says a slow beginning. I think this is a good point. Is it maybe not so much character development, but characters not as interesting as those in The Force Awakens. That's a good way to put it. Because they're not. Yeah. As interesting as Rey and Finn and the new... And one thing I thought The Force Awakens did really well is work the new characters into it to a point where you really liked them a lot.
Yeah, I mean,
you mentioned Poe as being your favorite non-Force character already. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's a good point to put. He said he found the droid funny, and Donnie Yen was awesome.
Of course.
leave it to the Asian guy. I think Donnie Yen was awesome.
I know a lot of people that aren't Asian that think he's awesome.
We have to pick on Long a little bit since he's not here. And Long thought the final battle and that the way the film ended was really good. And I agree with that. The final battle was awesome. This might have been the most action we've ever had in a Star Wars movie. I don't think so.
Return of the Jedi. That's why I love Return of the Jedi.
But even Return of the Jedi, I think, until the end. Once they get to Endor, then you get more action.
But why I love Return of the Jedi. The reason why Return of the Jedi, and I'm sorry, Empire fans, is my favorite movie, is because of everything that's going down
at the end. Your favorite. It doesn't make it the best.
Didn't Revenge of the Sith have a lot of action in it, though?
Yeah, but
it starts out with a space battle.
But I just don't like the characters and the overall movie. But it does have a lot of good action scenes, but... And I think that's where they were trying to go with this one. But
I think they were more brutal with the action.
I liked Return of the Jedi, and I think Return of the Jedi just holds more of a place for me because I can remember it more than the other movies. Because I was a little bit older, I could take it in more and appreciate it more than when I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. Like I'm going with my nephew. He's 5 years old. It's not going to be until the next 2 or 3 movies come out that he's going to really remember Star Wars.
Yeah,
as far as...
I think 5 is almost too little for this movie.
You know?
Because it is a darker Star Wars movie.
Yeah, it is.
Well,
you know?
This isn't episode 4.
Right.
But my thing is that's the reason why I liked Return of the Jedi. Well, it's because you had 3 battles technically going on. 3 things going on. Endor, space, and Vader on the Death Star. Luke and Vader on the Death Star. You had all 3 storylines going on at the same time. You know, and that's why I liked it so much. Mm-hmm. And I feel that, in a sense, this was only two battles going on at the end, but it was cool. And that since you had the planet battle and the space battle, you know. And that's why I like this movie so much, because it gave me the feeling of Return of the Jedi with the not just all one here or all one there. And they try to, yeah, they try to pull that off in episode 3 mm-hmm. at the beginning, which was okay. But again, just the characters, in a sense, you know, this wasn't there. I mean, I like the battle scenes.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong. They were pretty cool. But by the time you got to episode 3, the other two were kind of like, eh, okay. We're just watching the third one to get it out of the way.
So, basically, our review of Rogue One is me and Matt and Long kind of all feel the same about it. It's really good, but we're not quite as high on it. And Frank just has a boner for it.
Yeah, total boner.
Yep.
Basically.
Yep.
Still a small boner, but a boner nonetheless.
Bloop, bloop.
So, with future...
wah, wah, wah.
With future anthology films coming, Star Wars stories, whatever they're going to call them. I don't know why they just call it Star Wars Rogue One. But, you know, anyway, I'm not the guy who titles the movies. And, we know Han Solo's coming, and, you know, at first I kind of felt like, why do we need a Han Solo film? You know, the whole idea of Han Solo is that you don't know anything about him. He's that mystery guy. Like, you just know that he's going to do the right thing when it comes down to it, even though he might do his own thing, too. Yeah. But now that I saw Rogue One, I feel like if Disney and their producers and Lucasfilm can do the film to this extent, I'm okay with a Han Solo film. I would love to see a Han Solo film that maybe that we don't get any flashbacks in it, like we got with Jen. Since obviously they hired a young man, the guy who's playing him, and he's a little bit older, I want him to start at that age. I'd like to see a Han Solo film that just maybe takes place a couple years before he was in Mos Eisley, where he meets Lando, meets Chewbacca, and that's it. I don't want to know where he came from. I don't want to know about his dad or his mom.
I want to know what happened whenever he had to dump that freight on the Imperial, whenever the Imperials boarded his ship and Jabba got all ticked at him.
Yes, that's the story I want to know. I still want some mystery behind him. I want to see the smuggler Han, where he's already in action, winning the Falcon from Lando, doing that stuff. I don't want to know anything about his mom or dad. Yeah, so I hope that the powers that be at Disney are smart enough to separate it from Rogue One in that extent that we don't have another flashback movie. And, you know, you guys seem to kind of agree with that.
Well, I would kind of like to almost see a movie where it's not where it leads into him basically at that sitting down at to me, spoiler alert, if it happens this way, where he sits down at the table with Lando and Lando puts the Millennium Falcon up, and it just ends that way. Because then you know the story from there on out, basically. You already know the story. He wins.
Yeah, but I think you can't have a Han Solo movie and not have the Falcon in it with him driving it at some point. Yeah. I think you have to have that.
Because we already know that. I like to see him being able, all the stuff that becomes to where he doesn't rely on the Millennium
Falcon. Yeah, I think you got to have the Falcon. It's too important to his myth, though, as a character.
Yeah.
You know?
But we already know that he gets the Falcon.
I know, but I think you need to start the movie where he gets the Falcon.
But this isn't called the story of the Millennium Falcon. This is
no, but I still just think the Falcon is its own character way. You have to have the Falcon movie. Yeah. You can't end the movie where he gets the Falcon, I think. It's just too... That's like having a Batman movie and no Batmobile. You know, you have to have the Millennium Falcon in there.
Well, no, but also like the first season of Daredevil, but he didn't have to fight in the suit at the
end. Well, that's completely different. That's an origin story.
But this is an origin story.
You know, but the Falcon is still essential, I think. It's central to the character. Daredevil in his costume wasn't essential in the first few episodes of the season, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that works. And then now we're going to do a third one, which they still haven't. I think in April at Star Wars Celebration, they'll finally tell us what the third spinoff is. A lot of rumors that's a bounty hunter film, Boba Fett, Obi-Wan Kenobi, who knows?
How about just the story of the Mandalorians in general? I mean, we get a little bit off of that off of Rebels.
I don't think so. I don't think we're going
to get think it's a strong enough. The thing about Mandalorians is it's very much a fan thing.
Yeah.
The hardcore fans are really into the Mandalorians and all that. And I think you have to remember when they're making a movie, they're making it for the masses.
But I think we can have
something that appeals to them.
I think we can have another action-packed movie like we had with Rogue One Mandalorians.
Well, I think you can have them appear in a film, but I don't think you can center a whole film around them. Because like I said, you got to remember, the general audience, you're still selling a movie to general audiences. You know, and I think that's the part of that problem with that. And that's why I think in some ways, I don't even know if a Boba Fett movie would totally work. You know, right. I think you have to have Boba Fett with other characters in the movie.
Mm-hmm. He's definitely not a, I don't think he's a lead character. He's definitely one of those guys that
you want. I think if you go with too many bounty hunters, then it'll be another one of those. You just have a bunch of characters on screen that you don't get to know or like. So it's kind of like, eh, who cares?
Well, and that's why
action scenes, but overall,
and that's why I have a feeling. I have a feeling they're going to avoid a bounty hunter film that takes place like in between Star Wars and A New Hope, mm-hmm. or whatever, or Empire, because I think that even Disney is aware they can't get caught in the prequel trap.
You know
we already got Rogue One, and we're getting Han Solo.
We're getting Han Solo.
I think this third
Boba
film
Fett may be in a Han Solo film.
I think Boba Fett could appear in a Han Solo.
Yeah.
I think this third spinoff, when they announce it, is going to catch us all off guard. It could take place between 6 and 7. It could take place during the prequel era. You know, there's been a lot of talk about another Obi-Wan film.
What if they give us Shadows of the Empire?
That's not canon anymore, so I don't think they'll do that.
Or how about they just throw us all off guard and go 100 years before all of this and just do a whole other story?
Darth Revan, KOTOR?
I think they'll stay within the confines of the seven films we have.
Well, I mean, you're able to create a whole new lineup of characters. Digging deeper into the whole Sith and Jedi battle between the Sith and the Jedi.
I would love to see an Obi-Wan film that takes place after Episode 3, because you can't tell me Obi-Wan just sat in his hut for 30 years.
No.
I think he did, because
he had to have been tracked down.
No, because I think, honestly, what did Yoda tell him? We have to go dark.
Yeah, but how else did the legends about him get out? That's why I think he had to have an adventure there.
No, because people already knew about the Jedi Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Because of the Clone Wars.
And
he was such a great general.
They already knew about him. And that's why he changed his name to, just Ben. He went with just Ben on Mos Eisley and all of that.
Yeah, but I still think there's going to be an adventure there. That's how the legends
They couldn't have been talking about old Ben Kenobi. That kind of sounded like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
That's why I think there could be an adventure there. That's how the legend of Obi-Wan started.
No, I think the Obi-Wan strikes me as the kind that could just easily have gone dark. He knew he needed to shut it down and just
bang a bunch of
lay back.
Twilights and.
And I think, honestly, I think he stayed. The reason why he went to Mos Eisley was to keep an eye on Luke. Kept his distance far enough, but kept his ear out.
To make sure that he knew didn't that.
Well, yeah, we know that. That's why they sent him there.
To keep an eye on that's Luke. Why he probably never went off to do anything to bring attention to himself. I mean, Obi-Wan became a legendary Jedi because of his battle in the Clone Wars. And he was probably, and Vader knew he was still alive, so Vader probably had all kinds of stuff out there for his capture. Vader probably wanted him better than anybody else out there.
I don't know. I have a feeling they're going to surprise us when we get Obi-Wan. He knew who Vader
was. Obi-Wan was the only one who knew Vader, who was Vader other than the Emperor.
I think it's definitely a Jedi film.
The reason I think it could be the other reason, though, is
Yoda.
Lucasfilm and Disney have told, the only book that's been allowed to use Obi-Wan has been Marvel's Star Wars comic. They told a lot of writers stuff they're not allowed to use Obi-Wan, which tells me they're developing something, too. Okay. So I think that's a big clue.
Yeah, I just don't see it, because I just don't see Obi-Wan sticking his neck out there knowing there's probably a bounty from Vader on his head, bringing attention to himself, especially when feels like he was more sent to Mos Eisley to keep an eye on Luke. And then for him to run out and do a whole bunch of heroic stuff to bring more attention to himself, Jedi went dead.
No, because Vader didn't even know Obi-Wan was alive. He doesn't know until A New Hope, so why would he have a bounty on his head?
Yeah, because all Jedi had bounties on their head.
Not at that point, as far as Vader knew, Order 66 was over.
You know?
And remember, it seems like, you know, Luke knew Ben Kenobi, Obi-Wan Kenobi, because he says,
he had heard of him.
Ben Kenobi, he knew of him, so I wonder what kind of interaction they had. Maybe there was some trouble that, you know, Ben helped him with, and maybe that's
or maybe
that's
his
kind
uncle
of story
Ben Kenobi
get.
Did trades, or maybe Ben's come around a couple of times because his uncle knew who Obi-Wan was.
Yeah, and we get Aunt, Uncle
and so he's
Owen
been a couple
Emperor.
Of times to keep a track on Luke. I'm like, hey, how's Luke doing? Blah, blah, blah. Has he felt the force of any kind?
Yep.
You know, probably checked up on his uncle and them a couple of times and done some trading with him. So, I'm sorry, I just don't see a movie where Obi-Wan sticks his neck out, knowing all the stuff that's going on. Because even with the order over with, there's still an unwritten order that all Jedi would still be, if you come across a Jedi, to take them down.
Possibly.
That was the orders from the Sith to eliminate all Jedi.
I also always got the feeling that Tatooine was way out there, away from Imperial stuff, so.
The Hutts control it.
Yeah.
So, and that's probably one of the reasons why they went to that planet.
The Clone Wars animated movie, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin need safe passage through Tatooine, and so they're trying to cozy up to Jabba, but then, you know, Count Dooku tries to make it seem like they killed his son.
Yeah.
So
poured a lot of salt on.
Well, we may find out soon in April at the Star Wars convention. I think that's when we may not get an Episode 8 trailer until then, too.
I think May the 4th be with you.
Well, no, the Star Wars celebration is in April, and in an interview, Kathleen Kennedy kind of hinted at that they're not ready, that they don't feel they needed to start the Episode 8 campaign as early as they did The Force Awakens, because people already know it's coming, so we may not get a trailer as soon as we thought, you know. So we'll see. Expect a lot of information that next convention.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think that they have to release something, because there's been so many spoilers that have been released already. Well, supposed spoilers. There's apparently proof that Leia uses the Force when an attack is, you know, made on her life, and she uses the Force to protect herself.
Yeah, there's been a lot of rumors about that. The movie revolves around assassination attempt on Leia.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that would be cool. I mean, that's a cool plot.
Yeah, but the only thing I don't like about that is, remember, Attack of the Clones revolved around assassination attempt on Padme.
That's true.
So it's like, yeah, let's rehash things again. We'll see. But that's, you know, we got to wrap things up here, though, I think. That's been a good solid hour of Rogue One. And Star Wars continues on. Go see Rogue One if you haven't. We hope you enjoyed listening to our review of it. If you didn't care about spoilers, you obviously made it this far if you hadn't seen it. So I don't know why I said, if you haven't seen it, go see it. And Frank from our other show, Rebel Radio, you know, glad to have you on this show. And, you know, what? No thanks?
Well, no, I was waiting for you to stop talking. Thank you, but kind of felt like I've been cheating on Rebel Radio.
No, we'll record Rebel Radio next week.
Yeah.
And
well, no, it's just because we don't get to record it as often. So when we do a different show, I kind of feel like I'm cheating.
Go to TrustMeOmAJedi.com, and that's where you can find Remnants of the Rebellion and our other show. And we're also on iTunes and Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at TrustMeOmAJedi. And I do apologize for coughing on the show, and I've been a little sick, but I wanted to do the show. I hope it didn't make you turn it off, because goddamn it, that host won't stop coughing, and then Matt's going to be coughing too.
I'm the only one not coughing. So here, now I feel like part of the show.
But, you know, thanks for listening. Matt, and until our next show, which we're probably going to take a break from Remnants until after January 1st, so we'll do a new episode sometime in the next few weeks. Thank you for listening to Remnants of the Rebellion, a Star Wars podcast. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
And our guest, Frank T. Biscuit from the Rebel Radio podcast. So long, and what's your call sign? Rogue One. Adios.
Adios.